Good afternoon from Belgrade, Serbia, March 30th, 2022. I am suffering an awful, awful flu. So many big, big developments. I encourage you to take a look. Very, very big developments. We're going to dig in today, so get comfortable. We have some big misinformation coming from Europe saying that they have 25% remaining gas supplies. We know that the number must be much smaller because this is the same exact number that they mentioned 45 days ago. There is a much bigger crisis, and Europe isn't really trying to cover it up that much, a little bit. We had the German Minister of the Interior say, let them wear sweaters, as if heating was the main issue. How much industry comes to a grinding halt? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just like we talked about, we said it yesterday. We said, with the so-called retreat, so-called withdrawal, we said, give it the 72 hour rule, because things are never what they seem to be. And then we were followed by boom, 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 six booms. Anthony Blinken, Ukrainian foreign minister, Joe Biden, CIA analyst, former CIA officer, all confirmed what we said yesterday, right here, that this was probably not a withdrawal. Definitely was not the word that was used, so definitely it was not a withdrawal. This is what happens, and it happened to 45 all the time. That's why 45 would always say, only pay attention to my Twitter. Because whenever he would be paraphrased, every time he would be paraphrased in the lying fake news media, they would twist it a little bit. They would just change a one word that gives it all the meaning in the world. Let me give an example about what happened just now, yesterday, how Shoigu was completely misinterpreted. He said that the first stage operational objectives were complete, and now moving into the second stage, blah, blah, blah. OSINT, Ukraine, which does report on Ukrainian losses, but generally repeats unverified Ukrainian claims. That's supposed to be open source intelligence on Ukraine. They never caution readers that so many Ukrainian claims come without sauce. They don't come with receipts. But they took, I don't know where they got it from, but they misquoted Shoigu saying the military operational phase of the special operation is over. Over? And then people lost their shit, jumping around like monkeys flinging their feces against the cage wall. I'm telling people, calm the hell down. Number one, calm the hell down. Fog of war, 48 hour rule. And this all came in 4 hours later. I said, Anthony Blinken, thanks for listening to our live stream. Now, can you take me off of the Secretary of State, the State Department watch list? Because you've included my name in any number of reports. And I'm not happy about that. I run one of the most highly censored Telegram channels. Somehow, we see posts will say 48,000 views, and then in real time, the little eyeball, boom, 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 clicks it down by 2,000, 2,500. It's the craziest thing. Are we not seeing it? Did people unsee it? Well, I guess I'm right over the target. That's what it means to take flak. We are nailing it here. This is why we are here. Now, when the Russians come up with some bullshit, I normally call it. So many things I do not repost just because it's like nonsense. There's a lot of things that Russia produces for Russian audiences on Rossiya, Yedan, and Izvestia. And they're all kinds of, I mean, they're basically legitimate news sources, but they produce a lot of fluff, human interest, like Russian soldiers saving cats out of trees and shit. Like, give me a fucking break. And I spent a lot of time scouring the Telegram of the Ukrainian Rada. As of, it is difficult to keep my eyes on this. They've tried to rebrand away from being Nazis, and they're like, the Russians are Nazis, and we're patriots, and this is a great patriotic war, which is why we've gone around demolishing all of the monuments to the heroes of the great patriotic war, like ISIS. By the way, we've got something on that too coming up. All kinds of goodies for you today. So the top of our list of big important things is that the ruble almost fully has recovered to pre-war values. We got questions about that, I see, in comments coming up live. It's hovering now around 83, 82 rubles to the dollar, looking to hit 70s soon. You'll remember Biden in his epic speech in Warsaw, which, as you know, is the capital of the Ukrainian government in exile. That's why they do it in Warsaw. Can you imagine if Biden went to Kiev, by the way? Like, would he be, that would have been, like, Putin would have said, please don't do it. We don't want, you know, you guys are going to use this opportunity to take him out, install Harris. We know that's a plan. It's one of their many possible plans. Biden gets COVID, steps down. He said it himself. He said, if Harris disagrees with me too much, I might, you know, they might tell me to say I have COVID. He like said the quiet part out loud because he's senile. He literally said that, literally said those words, almost verbatim. I'm not stretching the truth at all. He said those things. Do you guys remember that? So in his epic Warsaw speech, the one where they had to invite the only people in attendance. So there was fake news about they were handing out tickets to the public. That's not how it works. Everybody that you saw in the audience were the employees and extended employee, like, you know, extended families of the embassy, of the U.S. embassy, and some friendly consular offices of like Lithuania there at that, in that tiny little square that they made it look like filled out. And he said that it was 200 rubles to the dollar. And you start to think, like, what are they basing? You know, is that just him being crazy? But they actually do have a valuation, which they're trying to introduce. And this is what they're going to try to force on if you try to buy or sell rubles. See, everyone I've talked to can't buy rubles anywhere. They'd love to invest in Russia right now. When it was at 95 rubles to the dollar, and they started saying, hey, you know, we're thinking of, they started to float this thing about putting a gold floor and pinning it to the value of the oil. They said of the gas, they said they couldn't buy rubles anywhere because it's unsure what's going to happen. Can you imagine trying to place a bet? Can you imagine trying to place a bet and then the bookie tells you, oh, we're not taking bets because we're not sure what the outcome's going to be? Well, what the fuck is that? No, I mean, seriously, what is that? But when they floated this 200 rubles to the dollar, that was not a mistake. He didn't read his teleprompter wrong. What they are doing is trying to create an alternate reality, an alternate valuation for the ruble, and then threaten to sanction any countries that value the ruble at the ruble's value. I shit you not. That's exactly what they're trying to set up. I mean, they're setting up much worse than that. That's almost academic at this point with everything else going on. False flags, chemical attacks. But just on that point right there, just keep that in mind. Now, in the U.S., we have the Hill, which is very, very typical, very Democrat, pro-Democrat, very anti-Russian, anti-Serbian news outlet, more editorial outlet. They publish articles from all kinds of black hat colonels and generals all the time. And they said that Trump leads Biden and Harris in any 2024 matchup. Of course, they had to lie and give Biden 41% approval or whatever. There's no way that Biden's approval is higher than Bush in his second term, Bush Jr. in his second term. I think that was at 37% at one point. But that could have been lies by the media to bring him down to prop up Obama too. So that's all. I mean, right? What can we compare? Comparing fiction to fiction is, I guess, a non-starter. So I take that back. But still, you get the idea. What do you think is going to happen with that? Will Trump go into the Senate? Will he go into the Congress and then prepare for an impeachment of the president and vice president? There's a lot of stuff on him, but that system is broken. I have a hard time seeing that. I mean, in my experience in making assessments on the possibilities of a counter coup being successful, the U.S. is a very unique situation, but I had said a year ago that this had less, about a 1 in 3 chance, and then it went down, and then it went up to about a quarter of Trump coming back before, well, we say 2024, but it's actually 2025 inauguration. But what's to say they won't steal that election again, if you are of the opinion that the election was stolen? Many people rightfully are. I mean, they have a lot of sauce on that. I'm not allowed to say what I think, but I think you catch my drift. Very big things going on. And when you look at the way this has gone down, people are trying to figure out what is the possibility in the U.S. Now, if this situation in Russia and Ukraine goes down the way a lot of people are hoping it does and results in pulling Ukraine out of the failed state World Economic Forum status, no longer controlled by the cabal, and if Europe sets up some kind of scheme, some kind of compromise on the ruble, where they what I think that they could do, because everything has to be palatable, everything is marketing, and everything is sort of not what it seems. If they were to set up a parallel euro that was pegged to the value of the gas, the Russian gas, in a sense, effectively pegged to the ruble without directly pegging it to the ruble, that would overcome part of the dilemma. Then the issue, of course, though, is the fact that, as Putin just said, the US and EU have defaulted, and their seizure of foreign currency holdings is basically very, very bad, of sovereign currency. That's very bad. They have broken the trust. And who's to say, why would anybody do business in that way? It's a very good point that Putin made. And we talked about many situations in which Ukraine would blow up these pipelines. And now you have Zelensky affecting his best growl voice, trying to drop his pitch 2 octaves. All 5'3" of that manlet, and telling people that taking on climate change is one of their number one priorities. And it just kind of reminds me of Will Smith slapping Homeboy in the face on the Oscar stage and in the debate about whether that was acceptable or not. And you can see a very similar debate go down if Zelensky were to have his people blow up the pipelines that run through Ukraine. See, that would cause, that would fulfill what he just said. What he said is almost like a warning. Now, if those are blown up, it's all on Germany, because they could turn on Nord Stream 2. And Nord Stream 2 alone has the entire capacity of the two pipes that go through Ukraine, which are older, the Unity and the Brotherhood. I think Brotherhood was renamed Progress, where there's like a feed in and whatever, different maps say different things. But you get the idea. They wind up in Hungary. There's like a little offshoot that goes up to Slovakia. But you can see how that goes down. And you can see how they're setting it up. Like, they're trying to give him a Nobel Peace Prize for existing. I think they were going to give him some kind of honorary mention at the Academy Awards for existing. So definitely they want to set him up to make him like, you know, the guy who saved the world from global warming by blowing up the Russian gas lines. And we said that was a very serious thing. And if that were to happen, everything would be on Germany with Nord Stream 2. Now, Nord Stream 1 pumps about 50. We're talking about billion cubic meters per annum, BCMA. And then Nord Stream 2 pumps 100. And the ones that run through Ukraine pump 100. So if those were out, then it would then to match that same total 150, you would need Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 both running. And those run through the north, like in that ocean, the Baltic Sea, over right into Germany. They don't pass. They go through international waters, I believe, most of the time. And they don't. Then you're talking about piracy and terrorism, but when you look at this conflict that we're in and all these countries just rewriting treaties and rewriting law, I mean, why wouldn't Ukraine just declare, since, you know, what, do they not own the soil under the ground? Of course they claim that they do. So they could, you know, just claim that. What's the worst that could happen to them if they blow that up? Would Russia invade them? Well, you see. Would they all freeze to death and et cetera? Well, yeah, but that's never stopped them before. You know how many people in Ukraine have wood-burning stoves to heat their place? Like, a lot of them. People chop wood. Industry, well, the nice thing about a lot of these countries is that they don't have industry. Now, Ukraine had industry. They've lost a lot of it. Most of the industry is actually in the Donbas. That's what's amazing about all of this. The industry, the way that Ukraine was set up, you have to understand Marxist theory, why the Marxist-Leninist government set it up this way. They actually added Russian lands with Russian people to the state of Ukraine to balance out Ukraine so that it wouldn't be primarily an ethnic Ukrainian and peasant economy, because both of those, that class of people were considered problematic, and then the ethnicity of people were tending to be under the sway of different warlords, and whether it was anarchists or warlords or monarchists, it was a very bizarre time. Germans, Austro-Hungarians, Polish-Lithuanians, it's a mess. Ukraine has been a mess for, well, it was not a mess during the 20th century except for war, but it's been a mess since the 1600s off and on. So you can see exactly how their thinking works. The real question is, do they want to collapse Europe? And by they, we mean the cabal, the transatlanticists. Do they want to collapse Europe? And does that push Europe into a crisis where they have a great reset, where it might take 10 years to start getting enough LNG from the US, but how long would it take to create like a pipeline? I mean, it's just so incomprehensible and so fucking bizarre what they actually have in mind. I mean, they say it out loud in the COVID-19 Great Reset book, which for those of you who've been with us know that we've studied this and gone through it extensively, but it's almost unbelievable, because you basically would create a Children of Men scenario in Europe, if people know the film Children of Men. And then, you know, that would be the end of Europe as you know it. That would be the end of it. Craig, go on ahead and repost an unanswered question from yesterday. That would be quite all right. Let me look and see what the question is. Craig writes, agree there is substantial evidence that Russia, China are bucking against the complete centralization of power envisioned in the Great Reset. However, wouldn't a shift into a multipolar world of spheres of consolidated control still be a step, perhaps planned and intended, towards the same goal? And if Russia, China continue implementing their own versions of digital control, is a similar outcome for the average citizen not inevitable? Is there any evidence that would lead us to believe evidence that Putin intends to reject or dismantle systems of digital authoritarianism within autonomous Russia? So those are all very good questions. These are ones that I deliberated upon in my analysis for the Russian Academy of Sciences through the Strategic Culture Foundation. And effectively, what I said was that even though it is said that, you know, the establishment of a unipolar system, which is geopolitics talk for a new world order, a one world government, okay, even though that has been defeated, the development of a multipolar world of spheres of influence that are regionally based, could that not also be go in the direction of building a new world order or one world government? Okay. And to answer the question directly, if the answer is, could it be? Yes, it could be. Now, you said, wouldn't it be? I guess that's would not it be? And that changes the question then, doesn't it? And I would say no, not per se, not automatically. And the way to think about all developments, Craig, is that the plan works through the plan. Let's look for a minute at the nearest closest analogy, which is the development of a European army, which we talked about just recently. And the structures of a European army are actually built through NATO. So NATO has had to kind of approve and green light these developments to a certain extent, although, you know, when you get to brass tacks and get actually very granular about it, they try to frustrate many of the steps. But formally, they're good with it. But they keep trying to frustrate the details of it so that it can't form into an independent European army. But if you look at the structure of a European army, it's identical to NATO, because NATO built the command structure for a potential European army just as a NATO unified, you know, the joint command. So it's just European army is that same NATO structure, more or less, with a greater commitment, with a greater automatic commitment on use of force. That's what makes it, like, to make Europe more of a country and less of a union of countries, right? And then to just remove the US and UK from NATO. That would be a European army. And NATO could still exist on paper and have an office and everything like that too. So now, a multipolar world, when you get down to the granularity of it, when you get microscopic, the one world order has been trying to frustrate the rise of multipolarity. That's why you have the IMF is the new world order bank, and that's everything. And then you have BRICS creating this alternate system of having a basket of different reserve currencies. It's one system that was still based upon the floating exchange rate system developed out of the Bretton Woods system. But nevertheless, I mean, as Bretton Woods degenerated, I should say, moving into the decades after Bretton Woods was established, and the floating exchange rate system, but still to decouple from the dollar and create a basket of currencies to substitute the petrodollar as the world reserve currency. Does that make sense, Craig? So that has been fought every step of the way. And likewise, for example, the development of a digital country-to-country currency for balance of payment in Latin America, like the Sucre, has also, or in the economic union developing in Latin America, very slowly, but still, called Mercosur, that just has to be, that is not at all what the planners have in mind of the New World Order. Now, the problem is that they tend to talk their book and gargoyle everything. So everything that happens, because there is a way to potentially reroute things back to their original scheme or some altered version of their scheme, they can always try to make it seem like that was their plan all along. That's the problem with these people, with these sociopaths, is that they will always try to backfill in a narrative that was exactly how they wanted it to be. But whenever you get microscopic and granular, you see that they've been opposing it all along the way. So that's how I would do it. So I'm looking at your questions here. ABC asks, why Americans believe in Trump still? I'm not saying this to disrespect, but genuinely curious. He's been an actor for a long time. He was even on the World Wrestling, WWE. He is the son of an oligarch as well and has pictures hanging out with Epstein and the DS gang. So why do you guys still believe in him? I don't understand the American logic here. Well, I would say that as you're not an American, you probably haven't spent enough time with how all of those things that you're mentioning were long ago answered. Like, those are all very dead questions. And these are things that even he's directly spoken to. Now, his father was not an oligarch. Just to keep in mind, the Trumps were like the Kennedys, and they are not part of the ruling class, and they are not by the Weberian social strata system even considered rich, like the super rich, rather. They're considered rich, but not the super rich. And the oligarchy, by definition, in a plutocratic system like the United States, is the super rich. The oligarchy is the super rich. They were not super rich. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And their wealth was built not in the speculative economy, but in the real physical economy. I don't know if you understand, but maybe other people will, about how class systems work and where your money comes from. It's not just do you have money, but where does it come from? Like, when you hear about Zuckerberg loses $35 billion overnight, you're like, how is that possible? Because it was digital money. It was just it's not really money that he has on command. They just say he's worth that. It's stock valuation, you see. And that's very different from real estate or actual tangible assets. It's a very different game. And that's exactly what's going on. So the thing is that people would understand, who are following it closely, that is it. So it's very logical. Don't underestimate Americans. Never fucking underestimate Americans, because you'll be wondering how it is that they came to rule you. So just, you know, meditate on that one a little bit. They're much smarter than you think. And never underestimate them. And American people already know the answers to those questions. And I've tried to just address a few of them. With Epstein, now, his current wife was fortunately older when she got involved in being a call girl and was brought in into the Epstein gang. And she knows about all the stuff, and she got him. It's a long story. You would have to approach it from trying to want to know what the story is and not come in with preconceived notions about anyone with $100 million of the oligarchy, or pictures being next to someone means that you're working with them, because that's not how reality works. For now, that's what I'm going to leave it at, because it's kind of a stale question for most of our listeners. But I appreciate the question. I hope you find answers. But I've given you some leads. The biggest question really is, what will happen to European gas? That's huge. We said that they are claiming 25% reserves, well, 25% left in their supply. And it's got to be less than that. It's got to be down to 20, 19, 18. Because that was 45 days ago. Why is it so low? How much they have left? That means that they haven't bought in a while. There's other things going on. Putin just said that the US and EU have defaulted. That's actually crazy. Putin said that they've defaulted. That's a huge, huge piece of news right there. We covered this today. It's actually probably the biggest development altogether. So what happens is that in the US could go any number of ways. And the reset to fail, it's still going to succeed more in Europe. See, Europe has to join up with Russia. It's very, very different. If you want to know what the solutions look like, and then we can work backwards about how those solutions come into being. But for Europe to avoid the energy crisis and to avoid the Great Reset, it basically needs to make a complete economic alliance and union, economic union with Russia. That's what Russia has been saying for 15 years or more. I hope this is making sense. The US, Europe doesn't produce enough energy unless they go nuclear. But even for the next generation, even for next generation nuclear reactors, they still need Russia. Now, if there's something else beyond nuclear, but this next generation nuclear doesn't produce nuclear waste. They're extremely clean and far less prone to leakage or possible injury in the event of a catastrophe or meltdown. They just basically don't melt down. I mean, I'm shortcutting that answer. Of course, anything could happen, but it's far, far less likely. And it isn't like we'll go around and see nuclear plants melting down all the time. I mean, there's been just a couple in the history of human beings on the planet. Two of them were caused by an earthquake. One of them was, who knows, some say it was a sabotage, but we're talking about Chernobyl. Meltdowns are rare anyway. Now, there's like some residual radiation that leaks out in the area around it, but if you live, you know, more than 10, 15 miles away, you have almost no difference in exposure, something like this. I'm not, those numbers, you know, I'm just, those are PFA values, but you get the idea. PFA means pulled from ass. But you get the idea. But, you know, Europe could go nuclear. Putin was just talking about that. Why didn't they do that? The Germany has had this crazy policy towards energy where no energy policy works. You know, the do you remember the story of Little Red Riding Hood? And she goes to the cabin of the three little bears. And she gets into their, she walks in the door and whatever, puts on the slippers. Oh, these slippers are too big. These slippers are too small. These slippers are itchy. And she goes for the, sit and eat the porridge. Oh, this one is too hot. And the next, this one's too cold. Okay. Germany is suffering from a Little Red Riding Hood problem. They refuse to have a functioning, coherent approach to energy. And you can see how the cabal created a dynamic where they're dependent on Russian energy economically, but politically keep on joining in. Whenever Washington wants to initiate sanctions on Russia, they join in. Because politically, Brussels are not answerable to the member states of the EU. They're answerable to transatlantic banks. So, this is a big mess. The solution for Europe is to break off political dependence on the transatlantic cabal. And then they can have their political policy be in line with their economic policy. Doesn't that make sense? And the moves to build a European army do go in that direction. But on the other hand, couldn't that European army be used to attack Russia? Yes, of course. This is just the 1930s all over again. This is just the 1930s all, in so many ways. This is a very dangerous time right now. Very dangerous time. It's an alternate reality in some ways because Ukraine kind of takes the place of Poland, doesn't it? And instead of Ukraine being partitioned by agreement, there's a war that may very well result in some partition or something else. But the U.S., the answer to defeat the Great Reset is much, much simpler. Because you would do similar things that Russia has done. First, you would put a gold floor under the dollar. You would attach the value of the dollar to real GDP growth, not debt parading as GDP growth. So that would, at the very beginning, seem like a weak dollar policy. This is all stuff that Trump was on about. I wrote about this in 2016, September 2015, I wrote about this, that the goal would be for Trump to somehow figure out how to do a weak dollar policy at the same time as industrialization. I mean, it just can't be done in one term. And the hardest part's happening now. Again, the Great Reset can go in a few different directions. A weak dollar is not the end of the world. What you can't have is all these games with livestock and food shortages and everything like this. But a weak dollar by itself is not the end of the world. Weak dollar basically just cuts off imports. And it might make some things more expensive in terms of if you're importing raw materials, certain expensive raw materials that are rare in your production, but it decreases your cost of production at home. And your dollars stretch go farther. So it's not really as weak. It's really just weak as a global currency, but as a domestic currency, it's not that weak. It's a lot like the ruble. It's a lot like how the ruble works. So, like, I'm in Serbia, and in Serbia, we've hit inflation in this, like everyone else, but prior to it, things are a lot cheaper. Salaries are less, but things are a lot cheaper. So there's a lot of ways of looking at this. There's a lot of ways of saving America. Even with what the Biden administration has already done, a lot of the things that you think are damage is because you're caught up in Republican versus Democrat talking points. You're caught up in the pointing out the hypocrisy stuff, like the day-to-day politics, which I find boring. I think most thinking people find that stuff insufferably dull. I don't know who follows. That's more like when people follow sports and then they follow politics and they kind of follow sports like, oh, this coach is leaving to go to this team and then this player sprained his elbow, so he's not going to be pitching for the first three games. And it's like, fuck this nonsense. A lot of parliamentary congressional politics works like that. And it's all noise. Pointing out this and that is noise. All the plans that could work, work through the plans that look like they're breaking. That's how all master strategists run things. That's how all plans work. It's the thing that when there's such a push in such a direction, it has so much inertia, the plan always must work through the plan. Forgive me how I'm stuffed up and I can barely talk. Forgive my sniffles here, but absolutely. You can see that in the U.S., what one plan is, so many different possibilities. So like one plan is to destroy Europe, right? Russia wouldn't invade because of the nuclear issue. They'll take Ukraine or part of Ukraine and maybe like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. They'll like retake Soviet Union stuff. But Central and Western Europe, Italy and the Iberian Peninsula and maybe the Balkans, maybe that goes to Russia, maybe it doesn't, part of the Balkans. That's you know, up in the air, just like the Baltic states, so are the Balkans. That's up in the air. That could go any number of ways. But Central and Western Europe and Iberia, definitely the idea that the cabal wants to destroy Europe. Now, that's what they did in World War I and World War II. That's how the U.S. became global leader, was through the destruction of Europe. It doesn't really matter which side they make the alliance on, really. They just make the alliance with the winning side. Or they make sure that the alliance of the winning side is the one that guarantees the destruction of Europe from both sides. And then they get the contracts to go in and build back better. But that doesn't mean the U.S. has to build back better. And that doesn't mean that Europe has to be destroyed. There's many ways to not do this, but we already discussed all Europe needs to do is align its politics with its economic policy, which means integration with Russia. But for the U.S., we're energy independent. All this is a lie. Like this whole thing with the gas prices and all, that's purely policy. There are no physical economics driving that at all. They could turn up the sprickets, the sprockets, what do they call? They could turn on the fucking shit in Texas yesterday and you would have 95 cents a gallon gas. There's potentially no limit to the amount of gas that's there. And you could let market functions do their thing and you could kind of create these artificial shortages on the one hand and then let the market feed off of that artificial shortage and get into exploration for more oil. And then you find more and you make it valuable to prospect for more in the U.S. or Alaska. I mean, that's the U.S., but you know what I mean? Continental U.S. or Alaska or Canada. U.S. could annex Canada pretty easily to get the deep state out of Canada. But this is all under the assumption that the U.S. is disconnected from the cabal. If the U.S. is disconnected, and there is a fight in the U.S., there is an inter-elite conflict. And a lot of the things that the cabal thinks that it's doing to build power are built into the counter moves to erode that power. And everything is fluid and everything moves in motion. There's no set plan that you have to follow. There's multiple hundreds of possible contingencies as everything unfolds in real time and recalibrates. But you could absolutely have a scenario where Europe is destroyed and the US is destroyed and both have a reset. In any case, it looks like Russia and China actually are using a different model. And they're going to go on to integrate India and colonize Africa, and you're going to see cities of the future in Africa with Chinese and Russian capital investment and energy. And you're going to see Europe going through children. You guys know what Children of Men is? Let me see. Actually, let me know in the question comments if you guys know what Children of Men is. This is Children of Men. That when I keep talking about Children of Men in Europe, there's a reason I keep talking about this. Do you guys know the movie? It's a must see movie. And the actor in that is in another movie called The International. Came out like a year apart. International, Children of Men is basically some mystery virus makes people infertile. Okay, and then because of that, because there's no hope, all the global economy basically slows down to a screeching halt. And what you have in Europe is like all these Salafi migrants that came from the Syrian war and that were led in from North Africa or whatever are like having full on, you know, white horse riding jihadi armies through the streets of Lyon in Brittany or in Paris. And then you have like French ultranationalist paramilitaries, but there's no state. Everything looks like Mariupol. Everything looks like how Donetsk looked 8 years ago when the Ukrainians shelled the hell out of it. So, and then the international is about a guy who gets in the top position of kind of like a bank, kind of like the IMF. Kind of like the IMF. They kind of name it like it's the International Bank of Settlements, though, something like this. But it's basically like the IMF or the World Bank, which is a lot like Klaus Schwab in the World Economic Forum. He's kind of like a Klaus Schwab guy, but it's actually, he's secretly a communist. Have you seen the Klaus Schwab photo where he has a bust of Lenin on his shelf? I don't hate Lenin. I learned a lot from Lenin. I have maybe every book Lenin wrote. I've read everything Lenin wrote. Not his collected works, because he's got like 10,000 frivolous letters to people, but I read his selected works. I know Lenin very well. Hard to disagree with a lot of it. Bannon also calls himself a Leninist, by the way. Bannon calls himself a Leninist. Google that. I never lie to you. I never make this shit up. It may sound sensational. I never make it up. So Klaus Schwab has a bust of Lenin. In the International, the guy was like an East German communist in his youth. And then when the Berlin Wall came down, he got into investment banking. And then he gets into be the head of this sort of like this, you know, IMF. And then he does a thing, manipulating some stuff at the top to bring the whole financial system down as a revolutionary to force a reset. Almost kind of like a digital version of the final scene of Fight Club, where they make a reset. I'm telling you, there are many things that are good and bad working through these plans at the same time. The same plan that looks like you're against it, there are good plans. Think about this. If you're listening to this and you're an American, on average, you are $85,000 in debt. What if that got wiped off? What if that was reset? What if they declared a jubilee just so that we could all go forward? The people who that money is owed to, just write it down. And they have enough assets that are solvent that they are still heads and shoulders above everyone else, because everyone takes the hit. It's just a reset. But it basically, even though, of course, there's different sectors in the economy and it all hits differently, you could offset that in different ways. You could negotiate between the oligarchy how that balance of power looks like after the reset. But there's so many ways to do a reset. You've been wanting a reset. You've been wanting a jubilee announced on that $85,000, $250,000 debt. So, and likewise, a weak dollar allows for industrialization. And now, while the elites and in Congress, they're very detached from the real crisis of the American in their daily life. But the real problem is more than anything else is if you rent, it's the power that landlords have to dictate too many micromanaging things of your life that it feels very invasive. They only have to give like 30 days and, you know, sheriff will come and evict on behalf of the owner, even without a proper process. And if you're an employee, it's the number of hours that you work. The pay could be better, but everyone, no matter what they make, says if they just made 15% more, they'd be happy. So it's really not the money. It's how much time that you have to spend working. If the economy were really growing, you would actually spend less time working because those dollars that you make would go a lot farther. First, you have to go through a period where the dollar is weaker. Then you build up the basis of a indigenous autarkic national economy. And then you build up from there. So you could even float that period of austerity. You could even float that somehow with some type of scheme to offset the worst pains of it for the most vulnerable parts of the population. I'm just saying, there's a lot of ways to do this, guys. The real crime and the real insanity are the psychopaths that want to kill off all of the cows and the chickens and say that they were euthanized because they had COVID. That's what's coming. But there are different competing things. This is going in a direction different than I thought today. So I'll just tell you what I think. When they talk about, if you understood what was planned for the United States, if you know what the Transition Integrity Project is, that was financed by the World Economic Forum's Nicholas Berggruen, who in his teenage years was a Marxist-Leninist. His parents were multimillionaires and got him into good mentorship so he could learn finance, capital. This is a lot like the International also. Wow, come to think of it. But he's younger. He's like 50-ish, 60-ish. Is that young? I'm dating myself. He's like 50-ish. But he's not like Klaus Schwab or you know, George Soros, like 1,000 years old. And he financed the Transition Integrity Project. And the head of the operations of the Transition Integrity Project was John Podesta. The John Podesta. And it was a war game scenario. That was the coup against 45. But 45 understood all that was coming. And there were many, many things that 45 was going to have to navigate through this time. And there were many things that were going to work out better. And 45 had to let these people take power. Because the only way that they could succeed in their plan was not being in power. I know that sounds crazy to you, but you have to study the entire Transitional Integrity Project. They expected Trump to reverse the stolen election. That would immediately make him, you know, a dictator. They expected him to invoke something like martial law or something like, you know, a lot of people were urging him to do. He knew he had those options. So he threw his own case. He made it look like he was an idiot and pursuing the legal channels in a half-assed way. He set up a team that he knew organizationally was incoherent. Patrick Byrne is running interference for him because Patrick Byrne, despite being like maybe a weird asexual dude, is also a genius and an agent of an American power vector representing American sovereigntists. Now, they're still cold warriors and they're still America firsters. And so the destruction of Europe might still be in that plan. They are Freemasons, and Patrick Byrne's definitely a Freemason. But at this time that we live in, the Freemasons and the Satanists are not exactly on the same page. As hard as that may be to wrap your head around, I know I said we might not go there, and it's a subject far beyond most people's comprehension because it sounds like we're talking fiction or science fiction or fantasy or conspiracy theories, but these things exist. You know that they exist, and this obviously, if they exist, that's the level they exist at with the oligarchy and the super elite. And there's an inter-elite conflict, and 45 did the best possible move between Operation Warp Speed to get an unsafe vax out today instead of people clamoring for a vax that wasn't supposed to come out until 2024. And that option to have this unsafe vaccine, many more people were going to die from unemployment. You remember with the lockdown and the original shutdown of the economy, unemployment jumped from 4%, 4.5% to 24% within a few weeks. Remember that? Maybe you don't. I do. It was a real thing. Anyway, for every 1% increase of unemployment, you get about 30,000 deaths, indirect deaths, from people getting cut off from health insurance and their COBRA payments are too expensive, to people suicide, to all kinds of things, mostly financial, but that's what keeps people alive is having in the United States is having money for healthcare and things like this. Older people affording certain medications. So you have sick people dying off, old people dying off, unemployed people with illnesses dying off or suicides. You actually get about 30,000 deaths per 1% unemployment increase sustained over the period of a year. So with 20 points increase, you were going to have, you know, just off the top, you know, something like 1.1 million deaths over a period of a couple years. And that's far, far less than the vaccine injury rate. Everyone knew what that is. And he called the bluff because the vaccine had already been developed. It had already been developed. It had been tested on, I mean, I surmise it had been tested on people in Africa for the past 5 or 10 years. I don't think, and prisoners and stuff like that. I doubt that they magically released this thing. It's just not possible. So you really have, this is maybe ABC is understanding what happened now. Maybe I'm answering your question a lot better than I thought I would, ABC. I hope you're with us. I hope this is making sense to everybody. Because I'm not, now I happen to be a Republican because of Ron Paul. But actually at that time, I was more of an accelerationist. And I was like, if Ron Paul is really going to just blow up the box and take down the system, like many other new possibilities are going to happen. I had many other ideas about great things that could happen. Totally unintended consequences from Ron Paul, but you know, I was down with the Relovution at the time for my own reasons. I have my own reasons for everything if you haven't figured this out. So I'm not a follower. But besides that, I have no interest in partisan politics. I understand it. I ran the ground campaign for the 46th and 48th congressional district in Southern California races a decade and a half ago, and the Mark Ridley Thomas campaign for the second seat of the LA County Board of Commissioners for Mark Ridley Thomas. So I understand get out the vote and party politics very well. Can't stand it. It's a lie. It's a lie. But what happened with the Transition Integrity Project, you have to understand that already, like as hard as it is to understand this, because our lives have been taken from us and we are all living on average, much lower standard of living or much longer hours of work, much less enjoyability in life than our parents. If you were born in the 70s, 80s, or 90s, or 2000s. If you're Generation X or Millennial, you're living at a lower standard of living than your parents, even if you're Millennial and your parents were Gen X. Even if that. So how can they be saying, oh, the economy is growing 2%, 3% every year? That's compound growth. Like we should all be working, like if it was really growing at that rate, you should all be working like 10 hours a week, living in 3,000 square foot houses with a swimming pool, like sipping champagne. That should be your quality of life for real if the economy was really growing. It hasn't been growing. It's been an illusion. And but despite that, so you understand very well that in that sense, you're not winning. In that sense, it's a very narrow sense to be winning, however. But nevertheless, that's the Western modern concept of success. And by its own self-definition, it has failed its population. By its own self-definition of success, it has failed its population. But despite that, things were supposed to be much worse. The courts were supposed to be packed. The courts were supposed to be packed. They were supposed to add 5 or 7. They were going to make the Supreme Court be like a legislative branch with maybe dozens of justices that were not lifelong appointments, which means that if they did that, that means that they're subject to the political whim of electoral politics, which is a disaster. I mean, they're already subject to dark money and being members of fucking cults and being detached for so long and the process of becoming a justice where you have to be basically out of Harvard or Yale in law review for 4 years. And then you have to be an intern or, you know, a clerk for a Supreme Court justice and then be, you know, the whole cursus honorum of being a federal district judge and the whole, they're cut off from reality and they're basically all autistic. I mean, and that's not a slight. I mean, they're literally, you know, spectral. They have no concept of what people live through. Which is why conservative jurisprudence between a whole bench filled with spectral people, conservative jurisprudence is better than liberal jurisprudence in many ways, because liberal jurisprudence only works if the judges actually live in the society that they're from. So in theory, and this may not make sense to people, when you interpret the Constitution, and don't tell me that you apply the Constitution and not interpret it, because I have a book right here, because I was pre-law, and Justice Scalia's book is called A Matter of Interpretation, not A Matter of Application. It's called A Matter of Interpretation. And you interpret the Constitution. It's called Constructing the Constitution. How do you construct the Constitution? And the crisis, they were going to stack, Biden was supposed to stack the courts. Look, first of all, it was supposed to be this. Trump assumes power. Then the military is supposed to break against him. California, Oregon, Washington, and New York were going to secede from the union with Joe Biden publicly encouraging them to, and him claiming himself that he had won and maintaining that he's the president and not conceding. Then it was supposed to be Washington, D.C. becomes a state and Puerto Rico becomes a state, thereby throwing off the balance of the Senate in an irreparable way. This is just like the crisis that led to the Civil War. This is like edging right up to, if people know what happened right before the Missouri Compromise and then afterwards and how they tried to hold together the Union a couple more years after the Missouri Compromise. There's a balance of the Senate. It's actually crazy what the deep state was trying to do. But their whole game plan was to have it happen from the outside. They work when they apply the pressure. So instead, what seems most reasonable is that 45 made it look like all his efforts were going to be towards staying in power, which is why the DS had Milley betray him publicly. And then that was like, oh, he's frustrated. And oh, he's, you know, remember that notice that came out? We didn't believe it at first. I told everyone, don't believe this at first. This looks like it's not dated. Why would that be distributed to the public? There's no date on it. I guess it was real. At the time, it didn't seem real. It was definitely fishy. This was like right before Inauguration Day. It was like a week out, 20 days out from Inauguration Day. And you remember they swore in Biden 5 minutes early. You remember this. There were so many weird things going on. They didn't follow the standard 21-gun salute. That's what I posted the other day. Like, just remember this stuff. There's a lot of weird things going on. they did the provision of bad climate. And everyone knows that the climate was fine that day. There was no atmospheric, well, actually it was atmospheric conditions. That was a symbol. That was a sign. Atmospheric conditions. Of course the atmosphere was bad for them. You saw Biden and Harris and Jill Biden and all of them walking that walk. They thought they were going to get like an airstruck or something any minute. They were going to be shot from a helicopter or something any minute. It was crazy. Whatever they were expecting, and they swarm in 5 minutes early just to make sure that something wouldn't happen at the last minute. It was insane. They thought there's going to be some trap, something going on. There was weird construction going on with the outside of the White House for the parade, but the parade wasn't supposed to happen. It was a virtual parade. It's just so many weird things, believe me. If you don't remember, I do. And the Transitional Integrity Project was designed around how they would stack the courts, break up the United States, or threaten to break up the United States, and then not bring it back together unless Trump steps down, Supreme Court is stacked, Washington, D.C. becomes a state that's 51 states, Puerto Rico becomes a state that's 52 states. So that's four more senators, all Democrat. Now you have a Senate with 104 seats. You'll have 18 or 24, whatever, 13, 18, whatever, 24 Supreme Court justices that rotate up and down from the federal district courts back up to the Supreme Court and down again based upon basically what Congress likes or what the Senate likes. So it's basically the Senate now imbalanced for Democrats can keep stacking the Supreme Court. And it's a big court. I'm telling you, this was the nightmare scenario. So, you know, it's very hard. You're always looking at the situation that you live in and thinking about how it could be better. And you should, in terms of fixing what's wrong and moving forward and bringing our agenda to save America forward. But when you look at what was supposed to happen, not like what I think was supposed to happen, like they put it out. They threw it down. They were very emboldened. What their plan, what they were going to do. They were telegraphing this at 1,000 decibels. It was a shot across the bow. You have to know what this was. You have to know what was happening at the time. And so now this takes us to Trump and Russia collusion. You know, I was entangled in that. I was exonerated. I'm still on the State Department watch list. I received a notice a couple weeks ago, dated March 9th from the U.S. Treasury Department. Be careful what you're doing. It was a notice, it was a cautionary letter telling me to exercise due diligence in my dealings with certain Russian entities. I've been in this fight for a long time. I know a little bit what I'm talking about here. The Russia collusion hoax was not completely false in the sense that the deep state, the cabal, knew exactly what the problem was. And you can see how problematic it would have been besides everything else we mentioned. Could you imagine if Trump were president right now? Don't listen to what Trump says in his, you know, his messages from Save America and all this and all the things that, okay, look more at like the things that General Flynn and others who understand, who had a sober approach to Russia, they said, just hand Ukraine over to Russia. Effectively, when you cut through the read between the lines, that's what it is. Again, the destruction of Europe up for grabs. I think that could have gone either way, but with the U.S. decoupled from NATO, which was definitely a Trump agenda. Remember how he put people fond of gold on the appointments of the Federal Reserve? And there were already changes happening, like at the very end of the Obama administration, things were starting to happen differently, like how they do things with the Federal Reserve actually began to change in a radical, drastically radical way that, although can be difficult to interpret and a little chaotic, makes many new things possible. Good things and bad things. The plan always works through the plan. That's how you want to think about everything. Is what is the angle here? In other words, your political education so far has been a couple of things. Number one, you don't believe politicians when they tell you good things, but when they tell you bad things, you believe them. Why is that? They're proven liars anyway. Why would you believe the bad things that scare you to be true? Those could just be trying to scare you. And number two, you've learned that whenever they propose something and it sounds good, you've learned to find how that can be twisted into something bad. Like saving the environment is actually all about global warming, and then those things that they want to do to stop global warming sound pretty bad. But what you haven't considered until you started to listen to me, I mean, maybe not, okay, I'm not, okay, whatever, but you know what I'm saying. This new perspective that we share here, new to many people, is that through the plans that sound very bad, there are angles of correction. Because you have, number one, the status quo, okay? You had the status quo. But who really wants to go back to how things were? Things were broken for decades. Okay. Then there's all this movement to change the status quo. And that sounds even worse. So they want to put you into a reactionary position of fighting off their changes to preserve a status quo that also didn't work for you at all. And you can't preserve. There's no going back. Time goes in one direction. It's the arrow of time. It goes that way, forward. The clock never rolls back. It just rolls forward. We live in a, everything is constantly changing. Everything is constantly fluid and in motion. And the status quo has the appearances of being stable, even though the internal mechanisms of that keep changing slowly, slowly until it bubbles up and you can't contain the changes. Now, once that chaos is introduced, once that status quo is shattered, it doesn't just work against you. There are many opportunities for you to climb that ladder. There's many opportunities for you to organize with your citizens and direct a new course. So you do want a reset. You want to reset debt. You do want, there's many things that you actually want to reset. And there are many things that were supposed to happen that are much worse than what did end up happening and has happened so far. How could Trump have been president right now with Putin creating the framework that if cooler heads prevail in Europe, forces Europe to have a sane policy on money? It forces them to actually hold rubles, and rubles as their energy supply is a physical tangible asset. Backed by gold. Not a fictional, how many zeros can you add on a computer screen currency. I hope this is making sense. So there's no way that Trump could have been president during this time, because there would have been all this pressure on him. And then, despite the fact that the Transition Integrity Project would have succeeded already by now, and you'd be living in the United States with 54 senators in 52 states, and 25 people on the Supreme Court. So you can see already when you look at Nancy Pelosi, have you seen that how they have, whenever they do their presentation, she acts like she's the president. And she, if you listen to interviews, she actually says, like, actually, in the United States, the executive, legislative, and judicial branch are co-equal branches of government, which they are co-equal. But see, the executive branch and the theory of executive power that has been developed over time is that the president himself, as the executive, has total control over all of the cabinet and branches of the executive, all the different departments of the executive under the executive branch. And the thing is that even though Pelosi is just a Congress person, and the House is actually, you know, not the Congress is not just the House, there's also the Senate, even though that's the actual framework, she sees herself, because the president of the Senate is like the vice president, she sees herself as being the sovereign representative of that whole branch. And that's why when you look at now how they have it, like, that was totally unprecedented. You see now it says Nancy Pelosi, leader of the Congress, like right there, like on the drape that they have behind whenever they do a press conference, like Nancy Pelosi, like as if she's the president of the United States. Can you imagine, like, the chief justice, who is it, Roberts? Imagine him being like, I'm the chief justice of a co-equal branch. So in a sense, it's like I'm the president too. All of those are signs of a country splitting apart, by the way. Whenever each, like, if you look at what was happening, like in Venezuela with Maduro over here, and then you had like Juan Guaido, who was like the president of the National Assembly, which is like being the president of the Congress, and then declaring that he was the interim president of the country, even though it was actually a different branch of, it doesn't matter what you think about Maduro. If you're listening at this point in time, you probably don't like him, or you don't have an opinion or whatever, but you just actually talk about how the Constitution looks. Guaido was trying to usurp. Trump did not like Guaido. He's like, that's a skinny kid. He doesn't have that bravado. He's not a man like the way Maduro is. Like, Maduro is somebody you'd be afraid of. Guaido looks like you could throw him across like a room, throw him out of a fucking window. He's like, we're not backing that Guaido. That's why he set up John Bolton, who he hated, to manage the Hillary Clinton assets in Venezuela to try to overthrow Maduro and install Guaido. That's why Trump was never like inviting Guaido to be his, you know, homeboy and stuff like that. He wasn't into it. Actually, very stupid policy. It's actually very stupid policy because of a lot of reasons. You would need Venezuela on your side, no matter who the president was, to develop a sovereign energy policy for the Americas. The real policy, the real plan, is for the U.S. to decouple from Europe and to reassert like a Monroe Doctrine 2.0 across Latin America. Now, you're seeing that happen already if you've read that NATO is increasing activity in Latin America. But that's, again, that whole transatlanticism, that's been the plan all along. If you really want to know what has been happening, is the U.S., whenever it has, the so-called socialist countries in Latin America are actually completely backed by European capital. And that European capital goes back to the city of London and back to the U.S., to Wall Street and to the banks, New York banking. It just goes as a roundabout through Europe, through Spanish and French banks that are basically owned by German, which basically are not able to produce a real sovereign currency separate from the global petrodollar. So they have completely convinced everyone that something else is happening than what's really happening. And what I wrote about for the Journal of Eurasian Affairs, I don't know if it was 8 or 10 years ago, this was a peer-reviewed article that I wrote that proposed a Pan-Americana system. So in other words, the United States has to integrate into the Latin American economy. And Russia has to integrate into the European economy. And then all of the causes for these conflicts, basically, you just get away from this idea that you put a bunch of things on boats and ship them into docks. That's the supply, that's the supply line, the supply chain crisis of the moment. It's stupid. It just doesn't make sense. And globalization has been a failure. And the globalists have failed. And they've said that they failed. They've admitted failure. So whatever plan B, plan C, plan D that they're trying to do, and do the nuclear option on Europe, it's not Russia that wants to destroy Europe. They don't want a destabilized Europe. Europe knows that. That's why they're calling this stuff with the forced payments in rubles. Today or tomorrow is the deadline. And just think about what's going to happen. Somebody has to give. And like I said, they'll create some dual currency euro, some holding company or some third party country will act as an intermediary. The currency will be held, or like a convertible euro or a convertible ruble. See, China has two currencies. There's like what they use inside the country and then like what they use for global trade. And the US could do the same. It kind of works like a promissory note, like the how paper money is anyway. Kind of works like a promissory note, or almost like a credit or a debit, a promise to pay, redeemable at any time for a barrel of oil or an ounce of gold, whatever. But you can see how Putin is absolutely right that all after this move that Russia made, all countries will see the sense of effectively they see that the US and EU have defaulted, and they're going to have to tie their currencies to tangible assets, land, natural resources, energy resources, food. Now, you can't eat gold. The nice thing about gold is it doesn't spoil. But when things crash, what you want is food. And what you really need is some type of defense organization, first and foremost, that's organized around principles and not around charismatic individuals. Every individual with a vision and a plan, with the best intentions, always interprets threats to their personal power as attempts to derail their plan. Maybe that's true sometimes, and oftentimes it's not true. That's the difference between warlords and the beginning of a state. So there's many ways to build back better. And from what Mad Max scenario that you're building back from is to be seen. But Europe is in far more danger than the US. Europe does not have any sovereign energy capacity that they could turn on today. The US could turn on its energy today. And you would be paying $1 a gallon. You would go back to 1985 gas prices, actually less when you adjust for inflation. It would be like 1960s gas prices. There's really no end to how much fuel there probably is. But at those low prices, then it becomes a question of what inspires investment into speculation and finding new oil. It almost has to get to a certain price before it becomes worth it. However, if you had a very weak dollar, there's another way to manage that. How much do people really have to make? How much do people have to make if all these banks holding mortgages were forced to simply erase the mortgages and declare everyone with a mortgage was now an owner? That would free up, that would take away from this whole sector of the economy that's non-productive, and it would free up the industrial economy. Now employers could pay much less, and your quality of life would not decrease. And then they could afford to get into a lot of new projects that were labor intensive and required a lot of employees. There's a lot of ways you can do this. But it requires taking back power in the United States. That's a political problem. But the economic foundations in the United States are more solid than in Europe because the United States has genuine energy sovereignty. Europe would need to get into some type of nuclear project, nuclear power. And even then, they're dependent on sources of where they're going to get their radioactive material from, uranium, thorium, whatever. So that's where you can see this is going. There's many ways that things could work out in the United States, even through this storm that you're in. You are in the storm. And things always look worse. You are at the precipice. I suspect things will get worse even still before they get better, so hang on. But just know how many things are possible and how much there is worth fighting for if you organize for it. As they used to say, don't mourn, organize. Don't cry about it. Get out there and fight. All these things that look like they're crazy and upside down actually can go in a very, very good direction through the craziness, through the things that seem upside down. Don't be afraid of a weak dollar. There's a lot of things that are going to, you know, hit us hard, but it's going to make you be a lot more independent and a lot more conscientious and a lot more. You're going to get closer to God, and you're going to be a lot more grateful for the things that you have. And the things that you do come across, the food that you do eat that's good, is going to taste a whole lot better. And you're going to redefine success in new ways, ways that your great-great-great-grandparents defined success. And they live much happier lives in many ways than you do. And why is that? Because the small things were everything. The small things in life were harder to come by. Don't be afraid of having your hours cut back. That time that you have with your loved ones, you will never, ever get back. Time is the only true resource as a human being. Everything else is just bullshit. So don't be afraid of the reset. And understand that through the reset, we can make our own reset. And it's not just we the people and us plebeians and proletarians and what do they call them? The peasants, les misérables, the deplorables. It's not just us. There's an inter-elite conflict because there's a lot of ways for people with money to make money in a new system that works for everybody. That's the thing about this. This is not a us versus them scenario. This is about building a historical block of all of the classes in the society against a very bizarre and strange cult that's taken power over large parts of our society. And they hide within the ruling class and they build cult structures within the ruling class. But they have defined an obtuse and upside down definition of economics and morality that is not capable of sustaining civilization or growing from it. And many within the elite see that as well. Many, many within the elite see that as well. You see, because these technologies, they want you to be afraid of 3D printing. They want you to be afraid of the fourth industrial revolution. Even though if you really studied these things, like the Internet of Things, they've changed the meanings. And I'll tell you, the Internet of Things is not smart refrigerators and every appliance connected to the internet that going back to public utilities so that they can meter and charge you for everything and limit your use and turn off the water. That is their way of doing it. That's connecting all the things in your house to the internet towards some type of zero marginal cost fantasy, and that's a nightmare. But the original internet, that's the internet for things. The internet of things or rather, that's the Internet of Things. The Internet for Things is you go online and you find, like on a wares site or like on Pirate Bay, and you download blueprints for any object, any household item, and you put that through into a 3D printer. And maybe that's in your garage, or maybe there's a facility that's close by that maybe is about as local as a local high school or something like that. And then you go pick that thing up. It's just automated. You might have some on the spot assembly working in a new type of industry, mostly based on repairs and on the spot assembly of all the parts that are produced in a 3D printing right there in any town USA, any town. That's the real internet for things and 3D printing. And that is the fourth industrial revolution. It's decentralization. So what they're trying to do is actually use those words, scare you, create all this propaganda against it by having the most evil people before it. See how they do that? Gargoyle effect. And then you don't have a solution. You just want to go back to how things were, which is impossible. You want to go back to being working 80 hours a week, getting stabbed in the back by your coworkers, climbing the ladder, being $200,000 in debt with kids that don't respect you. That's the world you want to go back to? With Britney Spears jumping around, Disney kids promoting God knows what. Is that the world you want to go back to? No. So they want you to be afraid of these things, even though all the liberatory potential is through those things, just not as they have defined them. What they really want to do is increase the coercive capacity of surveillance technology. Okay, so there's many great things in front of you. You just have to really look at what these things are. Don't make any fear-based decisions and never feel defeated. I think I'm going to wrap up now with that. I think that's been pretty good. I think we addressed everything. All right. Thank you very much and take care.